Today on Straight Talk Africa, a look at the city of Washington, D.C. The nation's capital is home to thousands of African-born Americans. We'll meet Mamadou Samba and Lloyda George from the Mayor's Office of African Affairs. They share with us the challenges and opportunities facing Washington's growing African community. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
Well, hello to you, Shaka, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, it's a discussion on the Washington, D.C. Mayor's Office on African Affairs.
An exciting hour ahead, and coming up later in our STA inbox, we'll share your thoughts on our topic. That's through your emails, tweets, and Facebook comments. That's ahead on Straight Talk Africa. Hope you'll stay with us.
The Washington, D.C. Mayor's Office on African Affairs, now more than 10 years old, is the first and still the only city office of its kind in the United States. My colleague Paul Sisco has more.
African-born residents are the fastest-growing immigrant group in the United States. The numbers have doubled every decade since the 1970s. The rate of Africans immigrating to the United States has climbed from 80,000 in 1970 to well over 1.6 million today. After New York City, the Washington, D.C. area is the most popular region for African-born immigrants seeking a community to settle down in. Around 165,000 African-born people live in Washington, D.C., and its nearby suburbs in Maryland and Virginia.
My name is Lloyda Rosa George, and I am a child of the diaspora. My mother is from Mozambique, which is located in the southeast part of the continent of Africa, and my father is from Guinea-Bissau, which is West Africa.
My name is Hassan Conte. I'm from Senegal, West Africa. I'm a child of the diaspora.
My name is Mamadou Samba, and I am a child of the African diaspora.
Mamadou Samba is the director of the Washington, D.C. Mayor's Office on African Affairs. He says the office's mission is to welcome, help integrate, and assist the city's growing African diaspora.
My first job was actually in the Office on African Affairs, which is where I'm now the director. The Office on African Affairs is essentially here to make sure that the district African population, which is one of the largest growing African population in the United States, is aware of and have access to all services that the district provides. Essentially, our job is to serve as liaison between the African community and the district government.
The African Liaison Unit, a part of the D.C. Police Department, works with immigrants to ease and address their public safety concerns. He says most concerns result from language barriers, cultural differences, and a general fear of law enforcement. The D.C. African Affairs Office also distributes grants and funds to many African community-based organizations, small businesses, and individuals in the region. It is very proud of the recently launched ECHO, the African Diaspora Coding Academy. The project provides web and mobile application training to Africans and others in the Washington area.
In the Office of African Affairs, we took some time to look at what kind of program exists in D.C. government that the African community can benefit from. And one of those programs is ECHO. ECHO is Yoruba for Learning, which is the code name for the African Diaspora Coding Academy. The goal is to train African residents in D.C. on how to develop mobile applications, on web development, HTML, you know, coding and IT training. And through this program, it is just a way for them to access additional training, additional resources, and earn the skills to in turn study on companies and eventually get good paying jobs.
The African Affairs Office has launched, helps sponsor, and organizes several events of growing importance in the nation's capital each year. The Young African Connection Summit, in partnership with Washington, D.C.'s Howard University, one of the finest historically black institutions for higher learning, and President Barack Obama's Mandela Washington Fellowship, promotes volunteerism, encourages community development and networking, and discussion aimed at finding solutions to problems facing African diaspora communities and the continent. And each year, with pride, the African Affairs Office organizes the Mandela Day of Service in Washington, a community service event commemorating the legacy of former South African President and Nobel Peace Prize winner Nelson Mandela. Paul Sisco, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Joining us here in our Washington studios are two distinguished guests, Lloyd Rosa George, Vice Chair of the Washington, D.C. Mayor's Commission of African Affairs and Immigration Attorney, and Mamadou Samba, Director of the Mayor's Office of African Affairs. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I have to say frankly that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you for having us.
You're most welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for coming again. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. U.S. country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately, Mamadou. In very simple terms, really, what is the Mayor's Office for African Affairs in Washington, D.C.?
The Mayor's Office on African Affairs is, simply put, an institution that is part of the Executive Office of the Mayor that is set in place to support the African community living in Washington, D.C. Essentially, we serve as a liaison between the African community and the government agency so that any other resources that is available for any district residents gets to the African community.
Very interesting. So what about you, Lloyd? Your particular office happens to be a commission on African affairs.
Absolutely.
In the same office.
Yeah, so the commission actually is appointed by the mayor. All of us commissioners are appointed by the mayor, but a distinct difference is we're all volunteers. We're all community members. We're not paid, so we're not government employees. What we do is act as the eyes and ears of the African community within the district, and we in turn relay to the mayor's office on African affairs what the issues are, and we then propose tangible methods of finding solutions to the issues specific to the African constituents within the District of Columbia.
Do you work in the office of the District of Columbia as an attorney?
I do not work in the office of the District of Columbia, but I do work in the District of Columbia.
Very interesting. Tell us about how you became an attorney, because the last time I checked, your parents actually wanted you to be a doctor with a clinic.
I see you've done your homework. My journey is unique, but I don't know if it's that unique. Let me say it this way. Like most African families that immigrate to the United States, they want the best for their children. And one of the surest ways to make sure that you get a good-paying job is in the medical arena, to be sure. I started out in that arena as a laboratory technologist. And my job was, if you peed in a cup, I would look through a microscope and give the results to the doctor. But I'm a people person.
People person.
And dealing with people's bodily fluids all day just wasn't cutting it for me. And I think it was always inside of me to be an advocate for individuals and to be an attorney. And so it's through that path that I found my way to the law.
You talk about how you met a lawyer, I think, here in the United States, who helped you, I think, to get your status as a pro bono type of person, really, correct?
Yeah, actually, it was the Catholic Legal Charities in the 80s. Not many people realize that the last time that there was any comprehensive reform, more specifically amnesty in the immigration arena, was in the 80s during Reagan's administration.
Interesting.
And my parents were able to take advantage of that amnesty during the 80s through the help of pro bono legal services. And I never forgot that.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
What about you, Mamadou? You come here, of course, as a son of a Senegalese diplomat.
Yeah, my father worked at the Senegalese embassy for about 3 years, and I came in, joining my family here. And eventually I became the typical immigrant looking to integrate the system, dealing with my own set of challenges, language barrier.
Wait a minute. How does a son of a diplomat end up becoming mm-hmm. a typical ordinary immigrant in America?
Well, at some point, you're not a diplomat forever. At some point, your term ends and, you know, you go back to your home country and you're no longer under that diplomatic status. And so we sort of have to find other avenues. And initially, I came to go to school. And so even though my father was a diplomat, I was somebody who was sent to the United States to pursue an education. And along with that, I had to deal with my own set of challenges, learning how to speak English, learning how to integrate the system, dealing with the cultures, African culture versus American culture. And eventually, spent a lot of time in Atlanta, and I'm not ashamed of it, but selling T-shirts mm-hmm. on the sidewalks and fixing watches in flea markets.
Good experience.
And good experience, very humbling experience.
A lot of your compatriots, in fact, do a lot of that in New York City, especially.
No, I'm very proud to have done it because it humbles me, and I can never get a big head because I can remember back in the days when I was selling T-shirts. And, you know, eventually I took a shot. Somebody gave me an opportunity, just like lawyer meeting a different lawyer. I met a coach who gave me an opportunity to go to South Carolina to pursue an education, and didn't give me a lot of money, but
you
really...
You played soccer?
I played soccer. Mm-hmm. I was...
Scholarship?
Yeah, I had an NCAA second division scholarship.
Did you deliver?
Oh, yeah, I was pretty good. I was compared to Messi at one point.
But... Oh, interesting. So what happened then? How did you come end up in Washington, D.C., my friend? And,
well, you know, I sort of, at some point, I just like Lloyd, I was always an advocate in college. I remember sitting in geography class and speaking up one time when the professor was talking about how hot Africa was, how hungry everybody was. And I was always the advocate, somebody who was always raise my hand and say, hey, what about this? Always try to make sure that Africa is shed in a positive light. And so I continued along those lines. And I came to D.C. because there was an opportunity to come as a Capital City Fellows Program, mm-hmm. a program that recruited graduate students to come to D.C. And my first job was in the Office of African Affairs. And I essentially rotated through different government agencies, served on a commission with LIDA, and when Mayor Bowser was elected in 2015, I had I was very lucky enough to be selected to lead the office, and so this is how I ended up.
Of course, you may agree with that, Professor, because obviously he seems to have had a huge dose of ignorance. But how do you explain the phenomenon that the African-born community in this country mm-hmm. is probably the fastest growing yes. immigrant community in the United States?
Well, it's explained by different factors. I mean, it is the fastest growing. We have 18,000 in D.C., 162,000 in metropolitan area, 212,000 in New York, and for different reasons. I mean,
about 4 million in the United States.
About 1.6 million in the United States. 1.6 million in the United States, African immigrants. And so... But it's different reasons. I mean, we come to go to school, some come for businesses, some come to pursue an education. And so I'm not sure if there's one reason why there's a growing number, but now Africans are going across borders to pursue different opportunities. And so the United States is a top destination choice.
When we talk about Washington, D.C., the stereotype would probably be that the single largest majority of African-born community perhaps comes from Ethiopia.
Yes.
Is that correct?
It is correct, and I'm not sure if that's a stereotype, but, you know, that's understandable. The Ethiopian community have started to migrate longer than most African countries. And so in D.C., the Ethiopian community constitutes about 43% of the African community, which is the largest African community.
And then the Nigerians?
Then you have the Nigerians. Then we have Ghana. Then, no, Ethiopia, Nigeria, Cameroon, Ghana. Then you have every other country that's constitutes about 4%, 3%, like Senegal, Guinea, and other sub-Saharan African countries.
No Uganda?
Uganda as well is there, but again, the 4%, 3%, very small African community.
Very interesting.
Yes.
Now we'll pause for a short break. And we would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter. And we welcome your tweets. Follow us at VOA Shaka That's VOA Shaka. And join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag DC African Affairs. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa. Become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders, they are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them, today, not tomorrow. So let's connect, let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies. Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward, to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known. It's Upfront every Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Very interesting, of course, that is the one and only Lloyd George. How do you do that?
How do I do what?
Right, a uniquely gifted singer,
yes.
In addition to being an attorney.
One has to take a backseat, as it were. I do own my own practice. I've been practicing now as an attorney for almost 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's fair to say that the music is currently running second.
Really?
Yeah.
Do they pay you for it, or you do it pro bono?
What, as an attorney?
No, as a singer, for example. As...
No, I do get paid.
Really?
I do get paid.
Very interesting. How often do you do it?
Well, I've been singing professionally now for about 15, 16 years. And there was a time I'd be performing about once a week locally. It's not sustainable now running my own practice. So I would say I perform about once every other month. With a big show quarterly.
What type of music are we talking about here?
So it's a combination of my background. I am...
You are born in France?
Correct.
Your mom is Mozambican?
Yes, she
is. Your dad, Guinea-Bissau?
Guinea-Bissau.
Equals a world citizen, eh?
Absolutely, and I was raised in America. And so I have coined the term Afro-Lusophone jazz, Afro being the obvious, I'm African.
And Lusophone, of course, being former Portuguese.
Absolutely. And then the jazz is America's original music, and it completely influences what I sing. So a good marriage of my background, present and past, Afro-Lusophone jazz.
Do you have deep pockets?
I do not. I wish I had deep pockets.
What would you do if you did? Would you put something back to Mozambique or Guinea-Bissau or both?
Well, to be sure, what I do from 9 to 5, I consider giving back. There's a reason I don't have deep pockets, per se. It's because I did not necessarily choose the most lucrative arena of law, at least monetarily. But I get a lot back as far as giving to the community and helping my immigrant brothers and sisters here in the United States. So I may not be impacting people directly on the continent, but I am assisting folks here.
Very interesting. Mamadou, talk to us about the significance of marking the 10th anniversary of the Mayor's Office mm-hmm. on African Affairs recently. Sure.
Yeah, definitely. So the Mayor's Office on African Affairs was created in 2006. And so it's been 10 years exactly this year. And it was important for us to take the time to recognize not only the decade of service to the African community, but also recognize the contribution of so many great African community members who have contributed to the office, to the growth of the office. People like Lloyd, people like other staff members, people on the commission, and community members. And so on September 27th, we organized this celebration at the Lincoln Theater and had a good 700 people there and really commemorated the 10th year with a number of traditional African dance, music, and, you know, honored community members who have contributed to the office, and really to celebrate what the diversity of the office and really embrace our rich heritage and our contribution to the city, which is also very important because as taxpayers, as residents, we do contribute to businesses, create jobs, and making sure that the city is growing.
If you were to put your fingers on it, what would you say that so far, at least in the last 10 years, has been the single most important accomplishment by that office?
It's hard to say, honestly. I mean, there's been so many great things have been done in the office the past 10 years.
Why should it be hard to say? We don't need a catalog here.
Well, in other words, so many great things, but personally, I think that one of the single most important, I would say two things. Maybe the first one would be the African Diaspora Coding Academy that we launched last year called ECHO. And, you know, this program trains over 120 Africans on how to develop mobile applications, how to build websites. And to me, this is very important because we've never had anything like this before. And for the first time, people are coming now to a program learning how to under skills, to in turn go and maybe get a new job. And to me, that's very important. We're giving immigrants the opportunity to improve their lives. And maybe a second one could be the public safety liaison unit that Lloyd and I and others contributed to, where the police department now has African police officers who work directly with the office and the community so that when an African is a victim of a crime, they are no longer afraid to step up because now they see an African police officer who speaks Wolof or Yoruba who can now they can communicate with and share their concerns.
What about the issue of police brutality? Does it exist in the city against the African-born...
That's not something that our office deals with, and this is exactly why this public safety initiative was important, because we wanted to play our part in making sure that they... So now, for example, Lloyd can expand on this. Earlier this year, we hosted a town hall where now we are bringing in the African police officers to educate them on how can they... Where do they go if they need to report a crime? How do they communicate with them? And also, we develop a cultural competency training for the police department, so now they can better understand the African community, because language barriers and culture barriers are factors that we need to consider. And so we are just playing our part so that our community understand, and also the police officer also better understand the community.
Very interestingly, why is it that up to this time, Washington, D.C. happens to be the only city that actually operates an office dealing with African-born Americans?
Well, I mean, to me, that shows the, you know, the great vision of our city leaders to recognize that this is something that's needed in the community, because Washington, D.C. is becoming top destination choice for African immigrants. And so not only that, but this is the center of the world, Washington, D.C. And so what better city to have this office? And, you know, I really commend, you know, the past leaders who have supported the office to making sure that we are where we are. So, and most cities are looking at us. New York, for example, and other jurisdictions are now, you know, last year I contributed to a report that was sort of being put to the New York governor's office to create an office on African affairs in New York. And so I'm just proud that the city has done it, and I'm really supportive of that idea.
Lloyd, I know that you went to the American University College of Law. Is that the reason why you decided to set up home right here, your practice?
I fell in love with the city. It's a true embodiment of, I think, the essence of what America is. America is a country of immigrants. Aside from the African slaves that were brought here and the Native Americans that were already here, everyone is from somewhere else, if we're going to be honest about the roots and the history of this country. And there are very few metropolitan areas within the United States that have a very widely represented community. Mm. Outside of New York City, I would challenge anyone to really name one metropolitan area in the U.S. where you can find somebody from all over the world. And there's something that's very inviting to someone like me, who was not raised in the continent, and even aside from that, not raised around people that were from the countries that I hail from, Mozambique and Guinea-Bissau. Mm. So it was nice to find a community outside of my community of origin, and an extension of that. And that would definitely account for, I would say, how and why the District of Columbia is a pioneer in having an office such as the Office on African Affairs.
What about your jazz interests? And of course, there is a great guy who hailed from here, who happened to be probably one of the very uniquely gifted icons of jazz itself. Was it Duke Ellington?
Duke Ellington, absolutely.
Did that have anything to do with perhaps you're actually hanging on around here?
Well, D.C. has a plethora of really talented jazz artists, young and old, many who are based here but are constantly on the road touring around the world. So I definitely was blessed with having the opportunity of really fine-tuning my skills in the company of greats. Mm-hmm. And so that definitely was an added bonus to living and working in the district.
Very interesting. What about you, Mamadou? What attracted you here, having lived here, of course, as a son of a diplomat, etc.? What really attracted you to Washington, D.C., and in fact, that particular office itself?
The truth is, I failed at everything I did. Every single thing I did, I failed at everything. Every place I went, I was very passionate about public service. When I went to college, I studied political science, and I wanted to serve. I wanted to be there for the needy, those who don't have a voice. And I spent a lot of time looking for jobs that I heard no many times. Everywhere I went, they told me you were not good enough, and you needed more experience or you needed more degrees. And Washington, D.C. took a shot, you know, gave me a chance. I applied for the Capital City Fellows Program. There were 200 people being interviewed for six positions, and I was lucky enough to be selected out of one of those six. And D.C. gave me a chance to prove myself. And within 5 years, I took advantage of several opportunities to enhance my leadership skills, to grow as a professional. And I was given opportunities to prove myself, and here I am today. And for me, being here is great, but also being here to serve the African community is even better, because I told you earlier about my experiences being in college, couldn't afford to even pay for my books at the time, and working two jobs to pay for my tuition.
But you had a soccer scholarship.
I had a soccer scholarship, but it wasn't enough. I mean, it was just enough to cover the out-of-state. It's essentially an in-state waiver.
And you said you are so good, more or less like the Argentinian superstar, Messi himself.
Well, you know, I was good, but not that good. The scholarship just covered minimal expenses. And so you have to, you know, as an international student, the tuition is very expensive. And so having been in college, and I joke about it, and I tell my friends that, you know, in Africa, people think that Africa is so poor, everybody's dying of hunger, but I had to come to the United States to go hungry for the first time in my life, right?
There are so many people outside
right.
there.
Right, exactly. And so having gone through that and being here to help other immigrants face their own, you know, overcome their own challenges is very gratifying for me.
I think the facts will probably show that Africa is not poor. It is incredibly wealth, except when it comes to leadership.
Yes.
Someone might say yes. There is a leadership deficit.
I will agree with that.
I see.
Yes.
Well, you're tuned in to Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariam Jero. Take it away, Mariam.
Well, thanks, Shaka. And being compared to Argentinian super-duper star Messi, I have to say, he has a special place at my house because he is one of my daughter's favorite player, and she has a huge poster in her room. So that's, I have to say, that's a really cool thing. Well, still to come, we'll reveal some of the excellent feedback we've received from our audience through social media. Stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders. They are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them. Today, not tomorrow. So let's connect. Let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies. Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known. It's Upfront every Wednesday, 1730 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
This is Straight Talk Africa on The Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111, and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct, and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui-Ewart, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa. Live from Washington, once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. The Washington, D.C. Mayor's Office on African Affairs says it envisions the city as a community that thrives on the full engagement of its ethnically and socially diverse residents. The goal of the office is to ensure that initiatives, information, programs, services, you name it, and unique opportunities reach all facets of the district's diverse ethnic African community. Well, this leads us to our question of the week, which asks, what would you like to see this office in particular do to improve the quality of life for the city's diverse African-born population? Well, starting off this conversation is a viewer from Asaba in Nigeria with our letter of the week.
I would like to see the Washington Mayor's Office on African Affairs create equal opportunities that would ensure African-born residents' social and economic development. The office should redefine and fully implement its core mandate.
Well, that was Vincent Atuma in Asaba, Nigeria. Before we move on to more of your comments, I'd like to thank you all for using our social media platforms to communicate with us. And another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Just use the hashtag DC African Affairs. And if you haven't yet, please follow us on Twitter. Speaking of it, let's go to a tweet from Emmanuel Kachele in Tanzania, who writes that the office will make a notable history if it stops xenophobia and inequality in the city and country. Emmanuel goes on to say that if it's possible, the office should work to treat all people equally and make Martin Luther King Jr. dream alive. Well, now to a comment from one of our Facebook fans. His name is Yahya Ahmed Gumel from Jigawa in Nigeria. He writes, the office should focus on redefining social relations between white Americans and black Africans, especially at a time when African Americans continue to suffer extrajudicial killings in the hands of white police. Also, he says, there are deep social and economic inequalities which has relegated black communities to the background. The office must promote social justice and mutual respect among the American population. Well, very interesting comments here, Shaka and guests, your thoughts. But before I send it back to you, actually, I can't have a Senegalese person in the studio without greeting them in one of the Senegalese languages that he speaks. And I'm going to say Nangadef. And for my sister, I can say hello, since you have some roots in Guinea-Bissau. And I'll say Botarde.
Botarde.
There you go.
Unfortunately, I doubt that we do have Wolof listeners, oh,
you'll be surprised.
I think we do. You'll be surprised.
Yes.
Your reaction?
Well, the viewers are absolutely correct as far as the tension and the dynamics that are playing themselves out in the media and in real life right now. These are serious times And in many ways, it feels like we're dialing the clock backwards. There were a lot of advancements. I don't even need to spell this out as far as the civil rights movement and beyond. And, you know, if you were to drop yourself in time from that era till now, you would wonder about what was all that work that was done for. To be sure, those are definitely mandates to consider. D.C. as a city is very unique, though. I would say that it doesn't necessarily reflect en masse the uglier side of racial dynamics. The District of Columbia, up until recently, was considered Chocolate City. To be more...
Chocolate meaning, at least for those outside of the audience that may not understand that?
Yeah, up until recently, and I say recently, I'd say within the last 10 years when gentrification has really kind of taken over the demographics of the district was predominantly an African-American city. Now, that does not mean that there was not racial tension and strife, but that narrative that you hear in other spaces and places around the United States wasn't and isn't necessarily reflective of the dynamics within the district. There were other dynamics at play, but I would dare say, at least in the here and now, the Metropolitan Police Department is not rife with abuse, physical abuse, killing, and whatnot. Now, there was one recently, but now that being said, our mandate as commissioners, and I'll let Mamadou speak specifically to the Office on African Affairs, is unique to the African immigrants' experience within the district. And that in and of itself is unique and set apart from the African American experience at large. And I say unique not to say that it's so very different and that there are not issues that cross, but there are issues that we are honing in on that are specific to the African immigrant diaspora within the district. There are other offices under the mayor's auspice that deal specifically with racial dynamics. We are more so the cultural liaison, so to speak.
Sure.
Very interesting. What about the relationship between African-born Americans and African-Americans, who also happen to have descended, let's face it, from the continent?
Well, when you say what about those relations, please be specific. I mean, to be sure, I've been in the United States since I was three, and without saying my age, I've been here a long time.
The interaction and all that kind of stuff. Because someone might ask, why in fact have an office of African-born Americans? Because when you come here, you pretty much integrate, and you almost become an African-American.
Sure. Well, let me just say that there, just like there's an office of African Affairs, there's an office of Latino Affairs, there's an office of Asian Affairs, and there's an office of African-American Affairs.
I see.
Right? And so all of these offices have been set up to deal specifically with unique issues in those communities. But in terms of the African-American communities, the relationship, unless you look closer, there's nothing to be noticed there. In other words, in our office, one of the key programs that we have is Diaspora in Dialogue, has been the centerpiece of one of our programs. And this past February, Loida moderated a panel where we joined with the African-American community to talk about really what unites us, rather than what people think divides us. And we talked about how the African-American population contributed to the anti-apartheid movement and how Africans contributed to the civil rights movement. And so these are things that we're doing.
And of course, how the African-Americans, frankly, contributed to the decolonization of Africa.
Exactly.
We're talking about Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois, George Padmore, and a lot of other people.
Exactly. Absolutely. And so when you go deep and you think about the relationship between Lumumba and the civil rights leaders and Malcolm X going to Africa, and so, I mean, you see that we're really more, we have more that unites us than divides us.
Very interesting. Mariama, any more feedback from the social media world?
Well, Shaka, you talk about Du Bois, and you're taking me right back into when I was in college and going back to one of my favorite classes, which was the African-American history class that I took which just taught me so much, so much more than I thought I knew before I came to the U.S. So that's one thing I would recommend for a lot of Africans who are coming in here to maybe think about.
You know where he's buried? He's buried in the Ghanaian capital of Accra.
There you go. Absolutely. Anyways, we'll move on to a comment from Mutungisa Allen of Kampala in Uganda, who writes that the African Affairs Office should ensure the economic, political, and social safety of Black Americans and the creation of credible employment opportunities. Now to a comment from Omunuwa Okugbo-Ighodalo from Abuja in Nigeria, who posted this comment on our wall, saying he hopes that the office will promote cordial relations between Africans living in Africa and the African-born residents in Washington, D.C., something we don't really think about as much. He also states that the office must consistently remind Washington's African-born population of their duty to give their best to the growth and development of the city they live in. Giving makes one feel great about themselves. I think there's a lot of stuff packed into that comment. Once again, your thoughts.
Interesting. Well, what about you, my man, Mamadou?
I will say that Africans, and I'm sure Lloyd will agree with me, we give our very best to the growth of the city. Immigrants, not just Africa, but immigrants open up businesses. They raise their kids here. They go to school here. We invest here. We buy homes here. We buy cars here. And so we create jobs for other residents. And not only that, we're doing a lot of work to make sure that our heritage is visible. This is the second year where we celebrated Mandela Day. Mm-hmm. For the very first time, I think, in any U.S. city, we are the only one that's doing it. 2 years in a row where we, you know, recruit over 150 volunteers to commemorate Nelson Mandela's legacy by, you know, volunteering 67 minutes to clean up a neighborhood in honor of Nelson Mandela's wish to commemorate his legacy with community volunteerism and engagement.
You might probably add the fact that his statues are right here in Washington,
D.C., exactly.
Outside the South African embassy.
Exactly. And, you know, we host also a summit in partnership with Howard University and President Obama's Young African Leaders, where we talk about how, as Africans, how we need to volunteer our time for the development and the growth of the city.
Yali, of course, now known as Mandela Washington Fellowship.
Exactly.
Thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, thank you, Shaka, and thank you to our guests. That will do it for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please keep them coming. And if you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. Or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV to Africa. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Just go to the VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website or simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Well, now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth look at the electoral process and presidential elections in the United States.
2016 U.S. presidential election reporting.
That's right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back. And our conversation on the Washington, D.C. mayor's office, of course, is on African affairs. Our guests are Lloyd Rosa George, Vice Chair of the D.C. Mayor's Commission on African Affairs, and Anatone, of course, and Mamadou Samba, Director of the D.C. Mayor's Office of African Affairs. Well, I have to say once again, Lloydie and, of course, Mamadou, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you absolutely for having us.
You're most welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Charles.
You're most welcome.
Thank you very much.
Let me ask you a very simple question. Some statistics indicate that about 43% of the African-born immigrants in this country, in general, either have a Bachelor of Arts degree or even higher. What is the typical African-born immigrant in Washington, D.C.'s occupation?
Sure.
Or activities? What are they engaged in generally?
So let me go further. The African immigrants are the most educated of all immigrant groups, right?
In the United States.
In the United States. Mm-hmm. In fact, one out of three immigrants with a PhD is from Africa. Mm-hmm. And so our occupation varies. You have to take into consideration that even though we may be educated, we may have language barriers that will prevent us from getting jobs at our level. And so this is why when you go to D.C., you get into a cab, more than likely Ethiopian, probably a PhD, because there are factors that when they come in, their degree is not recognized here. And so they may end up, working in hotels or driving a cab or fixing watches just like I did, but it's because of the barriers, the recertification process. But you find
that, is that unique to African-born?
It's unique to a lot of immigrants, but it's very specific in the African community.
I have been driven by a Russian who at least said he actually had a PhD
yes.
in physics.
That's why you need to be very careful when you get into a cab about who you think is driving you.
Very interesting. Yeah. What about you?
Well, the district, there are different push factors that lead immigrants to come to the United States. They range from economic refugees to mm-hmm. political refugees mm-hmm. to folks that are fleeing natural disasters to individuals that come here to study to individuals that come here as diplomats and or the children of diplomats. All of that you find in the district, and for that reason you'll find a wide range of who and what the African immigrant looks like, from those that are highly educated to those that are from the rural outbacks of a small village and were fleeing internal conflict. Mm-hmm. So to be sure, that's another purpose for why the Office on African Affairs is needed, along with the commission, to work in tandem together to find out what are the needs mm-hmm. of the newly arriving immigrants. More specifically, the newly arriving African immigrant within the district.
Mm-hmm. Mamadou, some of the forces that push, of course, don't only always or often have the African end up crossing the Atlantic and coming to the United States. I'm sure when you watch television or you read news on a daily basis, mm-hmm. you see some of our brothers and sisters
yes.
actually drowning
yes.
in the Mediterranean.
Yes.
What would you like to say to those in charge of mm-hmm. African countries, really, to create conditions, frankly, mm-hmm. that prevent that? Because, as I said earlier, mm-hmm. Africa is not a poor continent. Mm-hmm. On the contrary, it is perhaps the richest continent, in fact, in resources on planet Earth.
Yes.
But unfortunately, there Africa's sons and daughters, mm-hmm. for some strange reason, mm-hmm. do not have the luxury of exploiting that
sure.
to their benefits.
It's very sad to see our brothers and sisters drowning across the Atlantic to go to Europe or any other countries. That's due to more than I can say here. But a lot of it has to deal with the lack of opportunities for the youth in our generation. And, so now we have an aging population and not much is being done to create opportunities for the millennials to occupy those positions. And in terms of choices, they go to school, they get out, they don't find employment, so they end up sort of in this endless cycle. So I will say that, one thing I will say is, for one, it's not even worth it, right? Because when you do end up there, some of them wish they never came because of, the situation there on the ground. Mm. But as far as our leaders are concerned, it's just a matter of, having the vision and the recognizing the role of the youth plays, not only in the continent, but also around the world, and creating opportunities for youth to step up, be leaders, run for office, and also aligning the training with the jobs of the future. Now Africa is all about, or the world is all about STEM education, science, technology, engineering, mathematics. And so what can our leaders do to align the jobs of the future with today's education. Make sure that when they do graduate in those areas, they can have the opportunities to intern, get a job, just like I did. I came to the city as a fellow who was given an opportunity, and now I'm here. Those are the things that our leaders can also do on the ground for our brothers and sisters.
Very interesting. A reminder that you're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. To participate in our discussion, please call us at 202-619-3111. Your country code is 1. We'll continue our discussion in a moment. So please, don't go away.
I wanted to present music and a side of American culture that is most important to me, that is a part of who I am. They're going to get some incredible performances. That's one of the things I love, bringing these artists in so you can get to see them do what they do. It's soul music, and that's what music is. It's that which comes from the soul.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook. Keywords, Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui Ewart. And of course, this is Straight Talk Africa coming to you live from Washington. Let me come back to you, Lloyd. What are some of the challenges that you have encountered in this city so far? And how were you able to overcome them?
Well, as a professional, I think one of the, more specifically as a practitioner serving the community, I think one of the biggest obstacles I've had to overcome is the dissemination of bad information.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes when people immigrate to the United States, again, for multiple reasons, there's a sense of desperation. And in desperation, there will come a willingness to believe whatever anyone tells you. And so a lot of times I'm dealing with populations that have been fed bad legal advice, and they end up getting themselves in bigger trouble, whether it's doctoring fake asylum claims or finding a fake marriage for the sake of a green card. And to be sure, these are individuals that all they want is a better life.
Mm.
But unfortunately, the laws of the land dictate, and if you break them, the consequences can be rather damning.
Mm.
And a lot of times, because individuals do not have the resources or the directive to get proper information, they end up getting street corner legal advice. And so it's been challenging to work around the bad information that's out there and actually get good info out. And that's another reason why I think the commission is very valuable, because especially in the context of immigration and immigration law, if you listen to that discussion in the media at large, you would think that the only immigrant in the United States is the Latino immigrant.
Mm.
And that is no ill will towards our Latino brothers and sisters, but we are immigrants, too.
But they have the numbers.
Yes. They have the numbers, and they also have the legacy.
The mathematics is in their favor.
Absolutely. But at the same time, there has to be outreach to our communities, mm-hmm. lest we fall prey to the bad info. And so so it's a unique challenge for our office to find creative ways to actually get good information out to the African constituents. Mm. And, you know, maybe the children are social media savvy, but, you know, a lot of the parents are not. So we have to be really creative on finding where the parents are, which are the people that are in the position to actually make the decisions in the house, and getting the proper information out to them. I would say that's been the biggest obstacle professionally, as well as a commissioner as well.
Mm-hmm. What about an African, of course, in your particular case, you are not African born, even though by association you were.
Yeah.
In fact, the way you speak the English language, for example, the way you carry yourself, it would be difficult for anyone, frankly, to think that you are anything other than an African-American. Yes. What about some of your colleagues, some of your friends who have thick accents like me?
Well, there's definitely a stigma that comes with being a foreigner. I saw that live with my parents. My father had an accent that he could not, and I can't say that he even tried, but he could not get rid of. And it would immediately identify him as an outsider, whether he was interacting with somebody socially or academically or professionally and so on. And so that challenge is real, and I think it shifts, unfortunately, it shifts the burden on us to be a bellwether, almost saying, hey, don't look at what you hear, accept me for me as a person. And a lot of times that requires that you have to be the best of the best for people to be able to see through that. That's not an experience unlike African Americans and or other immigrant groups. It's definitely a real obstacle, and I have to admit that there are aspects of being an immigrant that I don't have to deal with.
Right.
Until somebody sees my name, and then they have questions, where are you from? Or if my mom shows up, or, you know, other family members show up, and then the questions come, where are you from? But to be sure, I wear my heritage as a badge of honor. And yes, I was raised here. I'm distinctly different from my family back home, but I'm also different from someone that has a heritage that's uniquely African-American, too.
Could that perhaps be a reflection of the history of this country? In the sense that if you were black, you came here initially as a slave, and eventually, of course, society didn't quite really accommodate you because, let's face it, even in the Constitution of the United States, at the beginning, the black person was two-fifths of a person. In fact, the black person was property, correct?
Right, absolutely.
I say this, you know, because it's not only African immigrants, frankly, that have accents or sound differently, different tonation. You have a case under the Nixon administration when a one Dr. Henry Kissinger, a man who was born in Germany and who still speaks English with a very strong Germanic accent, he was actually being appointed the Secretary of State. And I remember President Nixon advising him not to hold a lot of press conferences because his accent could not play in Oklahoma. But he was still Secretary of State.
Sure.
Very interesting.
Very interesting, sure.
No, very interesting. It looks like, unfortunately, time is not our best ally.
Of course,
I had a
course.
Question, but I can't have it.
Of course, of course.
On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Lloyd Rosa George, Vice Chair on the D.C. Mayor's Commission on African Affairs, and Mamadou Samba, Director of the D.C. Mayor's Office of African Affairs. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next, and tomorrow morning is Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Washington, D.C. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.